Hi, my name is Christy, and this podcast is my pursuit to glean practical wisdom on femininity, homemaking, finances, and relationships from the God-fearing women in my life. Hope you enjoy this journey with me as we learn to smile at the future. Now let's dive right in. Hi, ladies. Welcome back to the podcast. Another announcement for this week is I'm going to be doing an upcoming roundtable discussion episode on how to graciously respond to awkward questions that singles receive. To give you an example, sometimes people will ask, "Are you picky? Do you want to get married?" and other questions. And in the moment, it can be difficult to think of an appropriate and gracious response. So I would love if you have had some awkward questions directed at you, please send those to smilingatthefuturepodcast@gmail.com. And if you have a clever or gracious response that you've given, I would love to hear that as well. We're just going to go through a whole list, and hopefully next time you find yourself in that situation, you will know exactly what to say. You'll feel confident and comfortable and hopefully diffuse the awkwardness of that situation. Also, thank you for helping us reach a milestone. This week we reached 500 regular listeners, which is pretty exciting for me considering we just started in August of this year. So thank you for listening. Thank you for sharing with your friends. And please continue to do that. Today's conversation is with Lisa LaGeorge. Many of you will be familiar with her name. She is a lady who is using her single years well and has invested so much of her life into ministry. Many of us know what a golden time of life this is as singles serving in the church. And Lisa is going to discuss how to balance that. And also, she's going to share some wisdom on missions for those of you ladies who are considering the mission field. Lisa's life and resume are quite extensive, so I'm going to let her introduce herself today. So thank you again for listening. And now here is my conversation with Lisa. Okay, Lisa, you are just such a woman of excellence. And having taken a class with you in college before going on a missions trip, I was inspired by your vision and heart for people around the world and for serving others. And I'm really thankful that you're jumping on here today and sharing with us your heart and answering some questions that I know a lot of single women think through. So before we jump into the questions, I would love for you to share with our listeners a little bit about yourself, maybe where you work, where you went to school, and if you could share a little bit about your Mount Everest story.
Well, Christy, thank you. It's always a blessing to have an opportunity to share really the journey that the Lord's had me on. I've planned most of this and just really grateful for how He has worked in my life and how He continues to use me in spite of life not looking like I thought it was going to, you know, when I was maybe in my early 20s or late teens. And so, yeah, I grew up in upstate New York in a little town of 917 people and 3,000 cows. My parents owned the only grocery store in town. And so I learned early to serve and to work hard and to love people and to love the church. The church was primary in our lives. We didn't do Girl Scouts. We didn't do club sports. The church was what we did. And so just grew up loving the Word of God and loving Jesus and knowing that there were people who didn't love Jesus and didn't even know who He was. And so even as a young child, was impacted by missions and by missionaries and his desire to see people, men and women, boys and girls around the world come to know Jesus. Just recently, my mom pulled out a paper from kindergarten where I had drawn what I wanted to be as my job. And it shows me, little crayon me, sitting next to a teepee, and it says, "Sharing Jesus with the Indians." That was very early, I think, implanted in my heart to love people and to love the church and to love Jesus. I'm really thankful for the way the Lord's worked. I thought I would do that by becoming a vocational missionary in Mongolia, I thought. I was good with horses and thought I'd become a farrier and move to Mongolia, where they have horses and need farriers who love Jesus. My parents said after I went to Bible college for a year, then I could pursue that dream. And my very first day of Bible college, I met a professor by the name of Will Varner, who was such an incredible communicator that I couldn't imagine doing anything else but teaching the Word of God. And so the next few years saw me pursuing that opportunity of learning how to teach, learning how to handle the Word correctly, and really studying its background and roots so that I had a better handle on how to communicate and to cross the bridges of the cultures, the culture of the Scriptures that we see there, as well as our own culture that we live in, even as it transitions, and also other cultures around the world that may not be as familiar with the Scriptures as ours has been in the past. So college, 5 years on the mission field, working with Native peoples in Alaska. No teepees involved, but there were horses in that ministry. So I spent 5 years doing that. Got my master's degree in teaching English from Columbia International University in South Carolina, and then ended up serving at the master's college and then the master's university for 20 years. And over that time, worked with thousands of students, many of whom I'm still in touch with, especially those who are serving faithfully in their churches here in the States, as well as those who are overseas serving as missionaries. And so over the years, the Lord's allowed me to visit 50 countries, exactly 50 countries. One of those was Nepal. Most of my travel has been in helping students. So whether it be student teachers teaching English in China, or working with students who are serving our missionary alumni around the world, that's usually why I was on an airplane. But Nepal was a little bit of a different scenario. I had been asked by some friends to go on a trek to Everest Base Camp. The trek was designed to bring awareness to people about disabilities, regarding disabilities. Many parents that I've engaged with in the church who have children who are disabled say that sometimes they wake up in the morning and think that they have to climb Mount Everest again. And so this became a symbol for an organization that I've done some work with called the Elisha Foundation. The trek was designed to raise funds to help continue the programs of the Elisha Foundation. And so in 2013, I trained all of 2012 and 2013 to school my academics body to become an athlete, and then climb to almost 18,000 feet. So we spent 7 days over 14,000 feet climbing through the Himalayas. And what a blessing it's been to see that story and the story of the young man who I was trekking with, who has Down syndrome, really spread across the world as a message of hope for families, for parents, and for young people with disabilities. And so one of the highlights of my life, both figuratively and literally. I serve currently at Children's Hunger Fund. Been there just 2 years now, and I am the director of the CHF Academy. So I'm responsible for all of our internal training, as well as assessment and culture building among our 85 staff. Children's Hunger Fund is a almost 30-year-old organization that equips churches, resources churches all over the world to reach out into communities of poverty that are around them and bring both hope in the form of food and, more importantly, with the gospel into people's homes. And so CHF is near and dear to my heart, has been as I've volunteered with my students over the past years, 20 years actually, and now as I'm serving in the office every day.
I wanted to jump into some of these questions because we have quite a few of them, and a lot of them just pertain to ministry in general, but also more specifically, we're going to touch on some questions having to do with missions, because I know that is a topic that a lot of Christian women think through of, should I go to the mission field? So just kind of with a broad question here, what areas of ministry do you see that single women in particular are capable of or uniquely capable of?
I'd like to maybe flip that question around a little bit and ask, are there things maybe single women shouldn't pursue? Because I think that actually is a shorter answer, because I think the scriptures has actually given us some clarity that women are involved at all levels of ministry. I love the passages where Paul talks about the women who have served beside him and where the Gospels commends women for supporting Jesus and his disciples and traveled with them. And so we see such a variety, even in the New Testament, of ways that the Lord used women in proclaiming his gospel and in recognizing that women were a part of the story, part of his story of really proclaiming the hope of the gospel, the good news of Jesus around the world. And so I think that's the same today. I would say women should not probably be involved in men's ministry. They should not be pursuing the role of elder and primary teacher in a church. But other than that, I think we have to stop and say, what is the Lord gifted women to do? What is their natural spiritual gifting? And then what's available within the local church? You know, over the years, I've done everything from nursery to youth ministry to college ministry and women's ministry, serving our missionaries. Really, the opportunities are endless. But I think sometimes women feel relegated, or churches do indeed relegate women to very small corners of the church, serving with children. There's nothing wrong with serving with children, but it's not the only place that is open, according to scripture, for women to serve. So go out there and find it. The Lord's gifted you. And if you're not using your gifts in the church, then there's a hole somewhere that the church isn't actually serving fully.
Yeah, exactly. And if you're in a smaller church, you'll probably be more aware of the needs and places to serve. And maybe there's only one or two areas that are in need of an extra person. If you're in a large church, like I am with Grace Community Church, you know, there's lots of opportunities, almost endless opportunities and areas to serve. I guess my approach has been try a lot of things and see where the needs are. And then I think you'll find out what your gifting is, even if you're not sure right now. Go ahead and maybe if it's not something you're completely comfortable with, but it's a need, then step up to the plate, be willing to put your insecurities aside, serve others, and see what God does with that. God wants willing people. And then the people around you, I'm sure, will encourage you. And if they see that that's something that you're really good at, maybe you're really good at greeting people and making them feel welcome. So maybe the Welcome Center or doing that type of a job, hospitality is needed. So getting the input of others in the church probably would be helpful in that as well.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times I think about the illustration of a car, you know, a car that is stationary is really hard to turn, but a car that's moving forward is, you can, you know, crank that wheel and actually get it to turn in a different direction. And I think sometimes we sit and think, oh, what could I do? Oh, what could I do? But the reality is, if you're out there and you're serving, it's going to become apparent what you're good at and what's needed. And so I would say jump in wherever you can. And it's going to become apparent to you and to the people around you where you should or shouldn't be.
Yeah. And that's such a biblical principle. God directs our steps. You know, we have to be moving in a direction for him to direct us where he wants us to go.
And Christy, I think it starts when people are young. I think a lot of families try to protect their kids from having to work hard, and I just don't think that's necessarily a biblical way of walking with their kids and teaching their kids. But I think we get an opportunity to say, what are ways that our children can serve even when they're young? They can set up chairs. They can carry, you know, a bag from here to there. They can learn what it is to be early to church and to help set up something and to wipe up messes and to clean bathrooms and do those things even when they're in their younger days. And then those things naturally begin to get infused into their everyday life. And so I think it's important for people who are young to get in and to get serving.
Yeah. Have it become a pattern of your life. Yeah. Thanks for that reminder. So another question I had along just lines of ministry. Most single women are working full time. We have full lives in that sense, but we do want to be involved in ministry. But I know for my own self, I also want to have time to be preparing to be a homemaker. And I'm trying to balance all these different areas, but I know that there must be ways that these can intersect and go hand in hand. Are there any ways that women can be practicing ministry in the church, but also doing homemaking skills and practicing those things?
Maybe you can flesh out for me a little bit more what you mean by homemaking skills. But I think what you're talking about is cooking, cleaning, doing laundry, learning how to cook for crowds. All of those things are benefits of being an adult. They're things that, again, I think are preparatory in younger years and that are taught by moms to young women and, God willing, to young men as well, when kids are young. So that when I had my first apartment and I was needing to learn how to clean the bathroom, I already knew because I'd been doing that in my home for years. So all of those skills of working within a household are pretty typical to just being an adult. And then they grow as you add people and calendars to that. I think it's easy for women to want to spend a lot of time practicing something without actually going out and doing it or being responsible for it. So, hospitality, for example, it's easy for young women to say to themselves, oh, I'll be hospitable when I get a family. But that's one, not recognizing that the Lord may have something different for you as he has for me. And two, is not actually fulfilling the calls to be hospitable, whatever your scenario is. And so even as a single woman, I would encourage my college students, yeah, maybe you can't invite your pastor and his family to your dorm room to have dinner. Yeah, that's not going to work so well. But what you could do is you could make a big salad and take it to a park and meet them there. Ways that you can care for people and be hospitable and, you know, figure out what it looks like to take a meal to a young mom or to go and visit an elderly family. Those are all basic skills that we do as adults. And they become very complicated when we try to set them in some ethereal framework. And then we add Pinterest to that framework. So I'm on an anti-Pinterest crusade. I think life would be much simpler for all women if we just didn't have Pinterest. It's a chronicle of people's discontent. And I think we spend more time administrating what we need to do rather than actually getting out and doing it.
Or feel like it has to be a picture perfect level. Your dinner table has to be, you know, fully dressed and you have to be serving turkey and whatever, you know. But yeah, it's not realistic. And most people, I mean, the people that put pictures up on Pinterest of those settings put hours and hours and hours into making it appear that way, and it's not realistic. So
I think the other thing that's helpful to think about is, why does God give us a home? It's basically so that we can invite the lonely and the hurting into relationship with him. That's the key. I've done some writing on my blog about hospitality and this from the perspective of a single woman. But when I have people into my home, they should expect to eat in paper plates, on paper plates and with plastic spoons and forks. Because there are other things in my world that demand my time. I don't have a dishwasher. And so I've just chosen, I'm going to have simple meals and simple desserts with my guests, but I'm still going to have them in. Because I want people to be in a context where they can be invited to and encouraged in their relationship with the Lord. And in the middle there, I get my laundry done and I put some pictures on the wall and play with patterns with my oriental rugs that I pick up as I travel. Those things are all subsidiary to actually being willing to have people around me. Now, the other choice, I do make some other choices with regard to homemaking responsibilities. For example, I was just talking with my mom about this today. I don't own a single item of clothing that has to be ironed. That's a very pointed choice. I do have some collars on a couple shirts that I had to buy for work. I use a hair iron, a flat iron on my collars, but I'm not going to spend time on picky clothing that I don't need if I can make other choices that are going to diminish, again, the administrative responsibilities so that I have more time to be with people and encouraging them.
And you said your blog, and I want to encourage people to visit that. Can you share the link on, I can put it in the description of the notes as well, but if people want to read more.
Yeah, it's just lisalagorge.com. Basically what I'm doing is I'm writing when I get questions from people. So, you know, if I've walked with a number of students through an issue and the third or fourth time somebody says to me, hey, can you tell me what you think about this topic? Then I'm going to sit down with my Bible and write out some advice or explore it a little bit, make some observations about the world around me. And so sometimes that'll be a message that I've spoken at a retreat, or it'll be just really a simple reflection on an observation in nature from a hike that I did. But it's a combination of those things. So lisalagorge.com.
I've been reading some of your posts too, and they have been encouraging. So we'll make sure to link that in the description. So as single women, we generally do have more time in our lives. So how do you balance saying yes to needs and opportunities and areas to minister without being burned out and overcommitted? Is there a way that you've thought through that?
Yeah, you know, there's a few things that come to mind. First of all, there are some ways in which I do not have more time than a married woman. For example, most married women that I know never have to deal with their car. I'm the one who has to clean the car and gas it up and get it to the dealer when there's a recall. And, you know, I'm not home during the day to do my laundry. So laundry takes place in the free moments of my evening. But there's no division of labor for a single person. And so I think sometimes there's an expectation that, oh, single people have all of this time, but yet there's also in some means a double burden of responsibility. Now, fill that with kids, fill that with, you know, feeding 10 people in the home instead of one person, and that definitely changes. So that's an initial thought. There are extra responsibilities that I think it's helpful for people to recognize. There's something else that I've done that some days I'm better at doing than others. And that's that I have, especially because I'm working full time, I teach part time online for masters still, both in the Master of Arts in Biblical Studies and in the undergrad program. Until COVID hit, I had a pretty robust schedule for speaking at women's retreats and for churches and women's events around the world. But I have a group of people who I work through my schedule with, because my tendency is to say yes to everything. And so I have three families that I engage whenever I get a request that comes in. Some requests are obvious. If my church, I go to Grace Baptist here in Santa Clarita, if my church asks me to do something, I don't say no to my church. So I do have to work through priorities on that, where sometimes I'll have two different ministry leaders come to me and say, we want you to do this. And somebody else says, we want you to do this. And I'll go to the pastor that's on my committee, and I'll say, hey, I've been asked to do these two things. What do you think would be more critical? Or do you think that I'm being silly and I really can do both? And so we have those discussions, and I've learned that the best way to not get in over my head is to not say yes immediately. And so I always ask for time, and it gives me time to explore what the opportunities are, as well as recognize what would be most beneficial for the church and make sure that everyone is on the same page with regard to that. So I think that's one thing. I think the other thing is I've made some really significant choices in my life to give me more free time. I do not own a house. Could. But I've chosen not to own a home because I live with a great family. My rent is cheap. It gives me more money to be able to do, to support missionaries. And it gives me more time because when things break, I'm just calling up my landlord and saying, hey, come fix this faucet. So I don't have to worry about those things. And so that does give me a little bit more time in there. And so I'm making choices, again, administratively, but I'm also making choices within my community by asking other people, is this good for me to do? Now, it may not be like a one-time thing. If somebody calls and says, hey, come have dinner with us, I'm not putting that through my committee. But it's something that's going to be either a significant time commitment, I'm going to be gone for a week, or I would be gone over a weekend where I had another commitment, or I'm going to have to do something every week, then those are the choices that I'm making together in committee with my scheduling committee and just asking them, do you think this is a good idea? Are there some things I should consider that would be different? So that's just a quick way to think about it. And then I think there are times too where it's okay to be tired and exhausted. There is every evidence in the scriptures that Paul spent and was spent for the sake of the gospel, and that Jesus was tired and pressed in by the crowds, and he didn't just completely withdraw for weeks on end. And so I think in our society where we think we can control everything around our lives, there's elements where sometimes it's okay to be busier than you want to be. Because it does help you to evaluate what's most important in my life. What is it that I'm missing? If I'm missing time sitting in front of a television, or you know, time going in to get my nails done, both things can be okay. Then you know, keep doing what you're doing. But if I'm missing time with my family, if my health is at jeopardy, that's when I start going, am I doing too much? But not when I'm just a little bit physically tired, or, you know, there's other fun things I'd like to be doing. That's not, you know, those are things that I have to stop and go, what's the best in this?
I'm glad you really pointed that out, the differences of what's important to be tired for. And, you know, if it's wearing you down physically and you're not going to be helpful to anyone in any situation, that's a good time to reevaluate.
Yeah, I think one of the primary values, whether it's not a biblical value, but I think one of the primary values of culture and of ministry can sometimes be busyness. I'm so busy. Oh, I'm so busy, right? And yet the reality is sometimes that's not the best thing. Because when you say that to people, when I say to people, oh, I'm so busy, I'm just so busy, it says to them, I don't have time for whatever it is that you thought you were going to ask me. But I talk about life being full. That's a great thing, right? Life is very full, and I'm delighted to be doing what I'm doing in the midst of it.
Yeah, that's really neat. You're putting the needs of someone else before your own, too.
One of the benefits of being a single person and needing to work regularly is that there is money that comes in. There's a salary involved with working full-time. For some single women, that will mean that they do not have enough money to live. For others, depending on job expectations and responsibilities, they have more money than they need. And so I think not only is time something that our selfishness encroaches on, our money is something that we can be very selfish about too, both ways, both those who need more or think they need more and those who have too much. And so I think as a single person, we have to stop and say, how is it that I'm going to use these funds that the Lord has given me to bless his people and to extend his kingdom? Really, when it comes down to it, every resource I have, I am a steward of, whether it's my time, it's my strength and health, it's my money, it's my gifting. All of those things have been given to me by God for a specific purpose, for making him look good, for glorifying him in the world. whatever my scenario is. And so for me to say to the Lord, no, I'm going to use my money this way, or no, I'm going to use my time and my strength this way, when he's placed other opportunities in front of me, that's when I have to stop and go, okay, first of all, where did any of it come from? And secondly, what's the purpose of me having it? And so it's always to make God look better, to a watching world. He's beautiful to those of us who have eyes to see, but a watching world only really comes to know him as they are exposed to him through our lives and as we're communicating the word of God to people. And so our goal is really to make Jesus look beautiful to a watching world. And so whatever I'm doing, that's kind of foremost in my thinking.
I think some of that comes down to, if you don't have a plan for your free time or your money, it is easy to just digress into selfish spending or not thinking about how much you're spending on what. So really thinking through where every dollar is going to go with your for your paycheck, and having a plan even with your time and your free time is going to keep you from wasting it. So I would love to segue here and talk a little bit about missions with the next few questions. And so the first question is, if there's a single woman considering if she should pursue missions, what things does she need to think through before she starts pursuing that?
The quick answer to that is the questions that a single woman needs to ask about going into ministry are essentially the same that any married couple would need to ask. And that is this something the Lord is calling me to? Is this something my church recognizes that I'm gifted in and they are willing to support me to move forward? And then what does my family think about this? And of course, there's all kinds of scenarios that those questions are being asked in. Maybe it's the single woman who doesn't come from a believing family. And so the parents have a very different perspective on what she should be doing. Maybe it's someone who's coming from a church context where their perspective on ministry is very limited. And so they don't see a role for single women. And so those choices need to be made as far as, is it best for me to be in that church? Or do I really feel like the Lord is calling me to be equipped to be in this type of ministry and I need to go to a different church? That's a choice. That's a question that people need to ask. And so, I mean, that's a scenario that is very real in our world and is one of those things. You just have to stop and say, what does the church think? What does my family think? And then, is this something I really feel the Lord's calling me to? You know, I was just doing some research on missionary sending around the time of the Civil War. So in the 1860s, there was a huge influx of single women to the mission field in the 1860s and 70s. And part of the reason for that was that there were all of a sudden a lot fewer husbands available. And so women were looking for ways that their lives could be significant for the kingdom. And all of a sudden it wasn't going to be through marriage, because the death that had taken place during the Civil War really just was a powerful change in the society. And so many women went to the mission field in the 1860s and 70s, because if they were going to serve, there weren't a lot of other options. And so motivations may be off on that, but hey, you know what? The Lord still uses our faulty motivations. If we wait till our motivations are 100% accurate, we're going to curl up in the fetal position and be in bed all day long. And so I do think there are questions that women need to ask. I think one of the questions they need to ask is, why not? Why not go? If the Lord's placed it on your heart and the church says yes and your family is supportive, then go, right? 95% of the North American church's funds
end up getting refunneled back into North America. So the same thing is true with our all of our workers. 90% of youth workers in the world, Christian youth workers, are in North America. That's horrible. What are we doing? Do we really need 10 youth pastors at a church? Let's pick two of them and send them to India, where there's 800 million people who have never heard the gospel. And so, now we're getting into it, Christy. So, I think one of the things that's so clear is that women need to minister, especially to women around the world. There's places like Bangladesh and Nepal where a man is never really going to get the opportunity to speak the truth of the gospel to any female in his community. But a woman can go in there and can sit and drink tea and dig potatoes with the women of the community and begin to articulate that life is short, eternity is long, God is good, and he's provided a way for us to be in relationship with him. And so that only happens as women sit with women or women walk with women. And so I think it is critical for us to recognize that single women are uniquely positioned without responsibilities, without ties necessarily, to be able to give it all up. I have on my bookshelf at work a card that was sent to me by a young student of mine who went 10 years ago to serve in the country of Afghanistan. And she was asking me in that card if I would be willing to speak at her funeral, because she recognized that being a Western missionary proclaiming God to a very violent society was likely to be a very short-lived ministry. And so, because many missionaries that she worked with, even her first day that she was there, three missionaries in her community were gunned down as they were riding a motorcycle through town. But she knew that if she was to be over there, she would have unique access to women in the community and would be able to speak the truth of the gospel to them. But those choices are difficult, but the gospel and Jesus are worthy of that choice being made. And so I think we need to put our American safety, right to safety, on the shelf and say, in this case, what would Jesus do? How would he encourage these women? Is he worth it for us to give up our lives on his behalf? And if so, who better to go and do it than those who aren't going to leave behind a family, a widow, and children who need them? And so we just get some really neat opportunities to see God glorified as women are faithful to that call.
Wow, that's powerful. And maybe God has allowed for there to be more single women at this time for more missionaries to go out. Who knows? We don't know, but having an eternal perspective and realizing our lives are short anyway. This is not our real home. We're on a journey and we can't even imagine what the Lord has prepared for us someday. So really, death is not so scary in light of that, and knowing we just enter into the presence of the Lord, and we don't lose anything, but we gain everything. Thank you for sharing that encouragement and that perspective, because I think we do hear a lot of it's dangerous, don't go, to these places or do that. And yeah, we are more concerned about our safety than we are about proclaiming Christ. So I think that's very important to have a mindset shift there. Another question here on the topic of missions, And this is actually a question my brother-in-law, who is a missionary, threw in the mix. He said, it's important to know what kind of team dynamics and what you're looking for in a team when you're looking to join in missionary work. So do you have any tips along those lines of what you should look for in a team?
Yeah, I think the answer to that question is going to be different depending on who the individual is. I think for me, when I was just getting out of grad school after having spent 5 years on the mission field in Alaska, I thought I was looking for a location. I thought I need to find the place that I can put my pin in the map and I'll go there and serve. And so I began looking at, cultures that I thought I would fit well in and languages that were easy to learn and places where there would be opportunities for me to use my skill sets and my gifts, the education that I had. For my grad school, I had to do a project where I went and I served in a small business center and taught English for 10 weeks in a country in Central Asia. And I had asked the missionaries at the beginning of my time, would you help me to identify things in my life and in the way that I work with people that would be difficult for me and for my colleagues when I get into a missions scenario? And would you be willing to give me that download at the end of my time? And so they were very faithful to do that. I was very grateful for their assistance. And one of the things they said to me, because I was in a kind of a multicultural scenario where I was working with Uzbeks and Kazakhs and Afghans and Koreans and people from Singapore and a number of different cultures mashed together in this area. The missionary said to me, you move very easily among these cultures. So culture is not going to be an issue for you. However, what is an issue for you is colleagues who don't do what they say they're going to do. And so your sense of loyalty and your sense of duty are going to be difficult if you find yourself on a team where you've got different perspectives on how much work should be done, how eager people should be to do work. And so that was really helpful for me because they said, stop looking for the culture that you're going to go to and start looking for the team that you're going to work with. And wouldn't you know, it was those words that the Lord used to confirm my transition to work in Los Angeles instead of in another foreign scenario. When I met the team, the student life team at the Master's University in 1998 or Master's College in 1998, I was so taken by their love for each other and their willingness to ask hard questions and to laugh and hug it out at the end, their commitment to seeing students grow in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, that I just said, I want to be a part of that. I want to be on that team. And so that was what the Lord really used to get me out of my mentality of I'm looking for the culture and the ministry. And I really began looking for the team. I think one thing that's necessary is that I think it's helpful when a single woman who is on a team has a voice on that team. Some missions teams are actually set up so that only the men would be in the room when any decisions are being made. And that's okay for the wives because their husbands are, making those decisions and they're maybe talking about it behind scenes or whatever. But for single women to not be in the room, there's no representative for them at that point. So I do think that's a dynamic. We have to think through what does that look like? Not that she's ruling anything, but that she does have a voice and a contribution to how things can be made. I think it's critical for a single woman to know what the perspective on singleness is among the other staff members. If you get into a team that the other missionaries think the only way you can actually serve is by being a wife and mom, and that's not what the Lord has for you at that moment, that's going to be hard. And I have counseled multiple women who have had to leave the field because the missionaries have said, we just feel like it's God's will for you to marry this guy, this national guy. And if you don't do that, don't bother to come back. So what does that look like? What is that perspective? I think it's helpful to understand what the team's understanding of workload looks like. You talk about being overwhelmed, you get on the mission field, there is no end to the needs that are in front of you, literally on your doorstep. And so if your perspective is, let's say it's someone who's maybe a little bit more of an introvert and they need a couple hours every night of quiet to recharge their batteries to start the next day and be able to be with people all day long, I think it's helpful to recognize that maybe you have to lock the door sometimes. But if you've got people on the other end of that, and we could go into church history with this, of the number of pioneer missionaries who could function on 3 hours of sleep and expected that everyone else on their team was going to be able to do that too, right? And so C.T. Studd was that way, right? One of the famous cricketers from the Cambridge Seven who worked in China and then worked in Africa for his entire missions career. And even his own children had a hard time working with him because he only needed 3-4 hours of sleep a night, and he expected everybody else on his team should be able to function that way too. So I think you have to know what those energy levels are on the team. I think you have to know what the spiritual commitment to friendship is, because I think if you cannot be friends with the people that you're serving with, man, how are you going to get anything done? I say that to my staff at work as well. We need to have affection one for the other as brothers and sisters in Christ, because there's going to be hard times that come, and that affection is going to carry us through some of those difficult scenarios where we can look at one another and say, friend, I know you have my best and God's greatest glory at hand here, and I have to trust that even when this isn't easy. And so I think a perspective on friendship is really helpful. So those are just a few of the things. We could go on and on.
Thank you so much for sharing. And I think if you're the only single woman on the team, that can be tricky as well, because I don't know if you found this, but it seems like a lot of missionary wives are introverted. Their husbands are visionaries or go-getters. They're typically the ones leading. And if you come on the field and looking for friendships and realizing, well, all these women are introverts and don't want to come out of their house very often, or they're very absorbed with their own families, it can be kind of lonely in that respect as well. So understanding the social dynamics there is helpful.
Yeah, and I think that just along with that, it's helpful to say, what is the perspective on the ministry of the missionary wife, right? Because you're looking at the issue of women as a whole, not just single women, but women as a whole. Because many, many missionaries that I know do not encourage their wives to learn the language, learn the culture, engage at the cultural level. And if that's the case, and the single woman is expected to do that, there's always going to be that divide there of communication and expectation. And so that just becomes very difficult. So what's the role of every member, not just who's the main missionary along the line?
Would you encourage single women to do short-term trips to get a good idea of missionary life?
Yes, but I would encourage them to do more mid-term trips. So a short-term trip today is typically a week long. The average trip is 8 days long right now for a short-term trip. But I think for a first blush of missions, first look at missions, that's a okay way to do it. But I think a mid-range trip for a woman who is seriously considering a location and a team, I think something in the neighborhood of 3 to 6 months or a year would be helpful. And then it gives both the single woman and the team time to evaluate fit with the field, fit in the culture, fit with the team, without it being a crisis if 3 months in or 4 months in, everybody looks at each other and says, this isn't going to work. So I do think a mid-range trip, something in the neighborhood of 6 months to a year, would be very helpful in that. I do still think a woman, a team can say, yep, this is what I'm going to do the rest of my life and go and make it work. But in today's capacity that we have, we actually have opportunities to do a little more exploration along the way. So either way, it can work. But I do think the short-term trip, the midterm trip could be helpful.
And I think Masters University does that well because they would send their teams out for 1 to 2 months. And you get a really good feel. I got a really good feel. I felt like I was in Cambodia for 5 weeks. And by the end, you're really missing food and home, things that you're used to. But it was a good experience to have that more long haul and be able to live life alongside the missionaries to see what it is truly like. And it was really helpful for me as I was thinking through, should I do missions? And so on a more lighthearted note here, do you have any book recommendations for our listeners?
Oh, I sure do. Always, always have book recommendations. I'm sitting here looking at the pile of books that I'm currently reading. Typically, I'm looking at maybe 6 or 7 books that I'm reading about the same time. I would highly recommend that single people, married and single people, male and female, would read the book 7 Myths Regarding Singleness by Sam Alberry. He is a minister from England who's worked with the Ravi Zacharias Ministries and Redeemer Nashville Church, and is a tremendous speaker. He is single, and this book is just really wonderful, attacking some of the myths that the church has that I've heard over and over and over again in my Christian life. And so that's a great book. I'm reading another one right now called Made for Friendship, The Relationship That Halves Our Sorrows and Doubles Our Joys by Drew Hunter. And that one's great because it just tackles the question of us being made for community. We were not designed to function in a vacuum. We were designed by a communal God, a God who himself lives in community, to live in community and be a part of that community to show the gospel to a watching world. You asked me earlier about my trip to Everest. One of the most delightful things that happened in that time was that I started working out in a local gym. And it was a gym where you took these really intense classes and there was a lot of yelling and sometimes puking, and I'm naturally competitive, so it was very fun for me, and I enjoyed the community of our suffering. And I talked one of my colleagues from the college to come over and join with me. He needed to get his health under control, and so I'm like, dude, just come over and we can work through this together. And so about 2-3 weeks went by. He came in and he was a part of that and had been working out and, you know, just a guy from work, right? But there was one day he wasn't there and one of the trainers said, hey, where's your brother? I said, my brother? He says, yeah, your brother, you know, that guy who's always in here with you. I'm like, that's not my brother. We're just colleagues. Yeah, I'm friends with him, you know. But he's like, oh man, the way you guys treated each other, I would have thought you were family. And it gave me the opportunity to say, you know what? We are. We're part of the family of God because we have the same belief about Jesus being our Savior and the fact that he's put us in the family of God. And what a delightful thing. And that conversation has continued to have echoes as I continue to work with some of those same people even today. And so we're created for that. I'm a single woman, but I'm still created for that. Now, that does not mean that I can't live by myself. And in a very public ministry that I have that's highly intensive in relationship, it's really helpful for me to have quiet in the evening. And so I've just decided I'm not going to have a roommate, at least for now. That may not be a forever thing, but that's going to allow me to be more hospitable when I can be. and allow me to have the time that I need to study when I need to get ready for public ministry and things. But I'm created for community, and I'm going to make the most of that in every circumstance. So I think that's another book. I'm about to start Dane Ortlund's book, Meek and Lowly, on humility in the life of Christ. I'm going to be going through that with two different Bible studies this year. One that I'm leading with college girls, and then one that I'm in with a group of adults from a couple churches. So I'm also always reading a volume of the works of John Newton. Just can't get enough of my friend John Newton. I've done quite a bit of writing about him on my blog and trying to pull lessons from his life for today. Maybe 300 years old, but his writings are every bit as warm and as tender and applicable today as they would have been to people receiving his letters and his sermons back in the day. So that's just a few.
Was he part of some of your graduate studies? Is that correct?
No.
John Newton wasn't? Okay. Someone mentioned that they thought that you had done your doctorate on him, but...
No, I actually did my doctorate on the Global Outreach Program at Masters before I was responsible for it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So, no, Newton just, I picked up some of his letters at one point, and the tenderness with which he communicated to people, whether they were a lord or they were a young person in his congregation, married, single, male, female, the letters just struck me as being, here's a man who loves people and communicates hard things sometimes very winsomely, but still very biblically and very graciously. And so just really delighted by that. And so over the years, have just read lots and lots of John Newton.
He has written a lot of hymns, if I'm getting my people right here.
Yep. Amazing Grace is what he's best known for.
Some of his lesser known hymns have been really impactful in my own life, and highly recommend anyone to look those up, but they're just very real and open and about his struggles with his own faith, but how faithful God is through all of that. So,
yeah, he was someone who recognized the poor in his community. There were a lot of single women who were in his congregation, in his first congregation, and they were impoverished lace makers. It was one of the poorest counties in all of England. And so here's all of these poor women, most of whom were non-literate. They did not have the financial means. And so they would gather outside of their cottages with their lace making bobbins and pillows, and they would do these little tells to each other, a little rhymes to keep the rhythm of the lace pattern. And so it would be something like what we used to jump rope to. So Cinderella, Cinderella. And so these would be very complicated little rhymes that they would be saying back and forth. And he said to himself, if they can say these silly rhymes and learn them, even though they can't read, they should be able to also learn scripture if it's set to music for them. And so he began writing hymns to go with his sermons. And those hymns were written, some of them that we only sing 3 or 4 verses of. Some of those may have been 16 or 17 verses long. And so they were written specifically to instruct the poor, single, non-literate women in his congregation. And if that doesn't say, I love people, I don't know what does.
That's amazing. I had no idea that that's where some of his hymns got started. Thank you for sharing that, Lisa. You just mentioned briefly that you are going through a small group with the Gentle and Lowly book. And you do have, if I can just give a plug really quick, I think on your website and your blog, you have some blog posts on how to lead a small group. So I would like to recommend that for anyone who is a small group leader and wants some just practical advice on how to navigate being a leader in that setting. It can be difficult and tricky navigating different personalities and, you know, just bringing people together and allowing everyone to share their hearts and needs. So I want to give a quick plug for that because I know that that was helpful for me when I read that.
Yeah, that was actually that series came out of a workshop that I did for pastors' wives at the Master's Seminary. And so that was just taking a look at why would you do small groups? What kinds of and shapes of small groups might you find? How do you help navigate, like you said, the personalities? What are ways that you can prepare for a small group? And I'll tell you, life is full, right? I was going to say I'm busy, but I try not to say that. Life is full. And so when I realized that my church had asked me to lead this small group of young girls, young women, I was like, okay, I'm going to dovetail here. So my study, the study that I'm in for my own personal growth, is families. And we're going to go through that book 1 week, and then I'm going to take what I learned there and I'm going to dovetail that preparation for these young women and see how that gets fleshed out in a different context in life. And so it's just a really neat opportunity to see how the Lord will grow us in the days ahead. So
last question for you, spur of the moment question. What do you love about being single?
I think there's a lot of things that could be said about freedom to travel and make decisions in an easy way. But really the thing I love about being single is that I know that at least for today, this is where the Lord has me. It's been very obvious through the years. I have dated some wonderful men. I have really enjoyed watching them all find someone else. It hasn't always been enjoyable in the moment, but I praise the Lord that I've had opportunities to become good friends with their wives and see how the Lord has gifted them uniquely in ways that I would have been a bad fit. So I love being able to look back over my life and say, this is where the Lord has me. This is my journey. This is not a mistake. It's not a season. It's not a waiting room. This path that the Lord has me on has been intentional. It's been rugged at times, but it's been for the glory of God. And so I can look at that and say, this isn't a mistake. It's not a mistake right now that I'm single. And, you know, honestly, if you know of any good, godly guys between the ages of like 40 and 55 or 60, who love Jesus and aren't super weird. They would have to be a little bit weird, but you know, I'm open, set me up, bring it. But for today, I know that the Lord is good and this is where he has me. And so the fact that this is a gift from God, this status right now is a spiritual gift from a good God. I can rest in that. I can relish that and I can use that for his kingdom and his glory.
Yeah, it's not plan B that we're on. It's God's plan A, and live it to the fullest and enjoy finding out why God has you single and use it to the best of your abilities for his glory. Yeah, I think that's wonderful. Learn to thrive and not just wait. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lisa. Everything you said was encouraging and biblical and helpful. Really looking forward to sharing this conversation with others. And I so appreciate you taking your time to open your heart today for me and the listeners.
Thanks, Christy. Thank you. It's been my pleasure.